Thank you for sticking with me. The truth is, you don't really think of things in certain ways until you remember that I think Philip was 9 the last time we were in a worship service together. His voice has changed since then. Reading from the 25th chapter of Matthew. Come, O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Here ends the reading of the gospel lesson. May the Lord add his blessing to the reading of his holy word. Most of you have been to graduations of one sort or another, and one of my favorite activities as a pastor was going to graduation open houses. In fact, one year, Liz and I went to 24 graduation open houses. Now, they were not all on the same day, but it was still a memorable June. I'll always remember it. And while I love graduations with the strains of Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance in the background, I love the term commencement even more. That's because graduations tend to look back and to celebrate that which has been accomplished. Commencements, on the other hand, help us to direct our focus to the future, that which still needs to be done. Now, I have to admit that I think I'm a bit like that Roman god Janus. I really like to look both directions. Connie, your reading sort of gets into that. While I love addressing the challenges of tomorrow's ministry, I also love the idea of looking at that ministry in the past. I think there's much to celebrate in that ministry. I think there's a lot to be learned from it. And so I will use the idea of vignettes to consider our ministry of the past as it might guide our ministry of tomorrow. Vignettes are those brief sketches that one encounters that seem to tell a story that is larger than the vignette itself. They may be small pictures from a movie or brief episodes from a story. But for us this morning, they are images of past ministry that may enable us to more effectively address the various ministries of tomorrow. Now, not all church things are heavy and super important. In fact, many are light, many are funny, and some are perhaps quite moving. And so I'd like to present some vignettes of my own time here in Ontario, which, if they don't apply to today's ministry, they may apply to tomorrow's. For instance, in my very first Sunday here, I processed up the aisle behind the choir, and when I approached my chair, I noticed that there was a small brown paper bag on it. Even though we were in the middle of a hymn, I leaned over and I opened that paper bag, and it were two small scarlet and gray pom-poms. Now, you newer people may not know that I am a Penn State alumnus, quite a rabid alumnus. In fact, next weekend, Liz and I will be staying at the Nittany Lion Inn. But when I saw those pom-poms, I had to laugh. You see, Vern, who was as big a Buckeye as ever existed, knew that I was a stranger here in Ontario. Even preachers can be a bit anxious on their first Sunday in a new church. And Vern knew that a good joke like that would go a long way in welcoming the stranger into your midst. Now, I didn't intend to have it go so far. I even used it as the opening hymn. I like that for those of you who are big Buckeye people. I did that, and I salute you. I didn't intend to have it also be part of the prelude. I mean, I could have skipped that hymn. but you welcomed the stranger into your midst. That's the vignette, just a little bit more than a snapshot. Every church I had ever had anything to do with has seen itself as a loving congregation. And they are, at least to each other. But how do they welcome the stranger into their midst? That's ministry. Simple, effective, and at least from my standpoint, it was memorable. I don't know if anyone else here this morning remembers that brown paper bag, but I do. And I felt welcome. Most congregations have tremendous talents and knowledge embedded in them, and Ontario is no exception. Each year, perhaps a dozen folks from Ontario would go down to John's Island in South Carolina, and several of you may still be here this morning. In fact, I've seen a few. And they would rehab homes, and I'm not talking just simple things, but they would do things that are far beyond my capability. That's it. It had nothing to do with pastoral leadership. It had nothing to do with mission statements or committees. It was a sense of mission that came out of the body of the congregation. In those same years, Mary Ann served on a hospital ship, and I think that that first year that I was here in Ontario was the year that she went to the Baltic. It was a simple response to a personal call to ministry. People recognized the gifts that they had been given, and they put them to use in order that the world might be a little bit better place for their having been here. Vignettes. You know, pastors often do children's sermons, and I absolutely loved doing children's sermons. And I thought I was pretty good at it. Now, partly that was because I absolutely loved kids, and partly because we are in the seed planting business. We plant seeds in children in an effort to enable them to grow up with that same sort of call, that same sense of Christian mission. But as I said, I thought I was pretty good at giving children sermons, and I have given them for over 30 years, but I don't remember a one that I gave when I was in Ontario. The sermon that I remember from Ontario was not one that I gave, but it was one that Shirley gave. It had to do with the cutting of an apple in half, and when she was finished cutting that apple in half, she held that apple up and we could see a cross where the core of that apple was. Here it is a quarter century later, and I still remember that children's sermon. Pastors have a lot of training, but we often forget that the lay people have so very, very many gifts. It's really quite humbling to find out that someone without a bunch of seminary degrees is often better able to communicate and demonstrate the gospel to a child than I am. But it's also heartening. It's also wonderful. I remember a beautiful 15-year-old girl who died shortly before Christmas. What was wonderful is how supportive of one another her friends were. And Dan was the senior high Sunday school teacher at that time, and he called to ask if it would be okay, would I be willing to come and talk to the senior high kids on Sunday morning in Sunday school? And I said, certainly. And then about 15 minutes later, he called back and said, some of the kids' friends would like to come. Would it be okay if he were to invite their friends to come to that Sunday school class as well? Of course it'd be all right. It was wonderful. And I remember that at that service, one girl played the Meditation from Thais on her violin right back there. And I remember it all these years later, and I never hear that number without thinking of that service and those young people. Six high school freshmen were Meredith's pallbearers, probably the first time that this particular group of six kids were ever out of sneakers. And they were scared to death that they would drop their friend as she was taken to her grave right next door here. But they realized that it was important to her family and friends that they do a good job. It was a ministry that they could do, and they were marvelous. Most ministry is made up of small things. We don't win Nobel Prizes for Christian ministry. People may not even know about it much of the time, but these things are ministry to people who hurt, or people who are in need, or people who grieve. And Ontario United Methodist Church has provided that type of ministry to people for a century. Vignettes. Liz and I loved singing in the choir. Liz had been singing in the choir ever since she was an adolescent, and she thought she was pretty good at it. I, on the other hand, had not had all that experience. And my hearing was already on the decline, so if someone says good morning to me, I may not hear you. Get in my face. But it was difficult for me at choir rehearsal, but fortunately there were the two B's. Not Bach and Beethoven, but Buzz and Burdell. And they would guide me. But there are folks who have been singing in your church choir since long before I arrived in Ontario, and some of them are continuing to sing today, and that's ministry. The same thing can be said of Sunday school teachers. And Connie and I team taught confirmation classes, and I loved it. And I am still in touch with a number of those young people a quarter of a century later. And some of those kids even sponsor me for Flat Rock's Race the Rock. And once they're on their list, they don't get off. When Liz and I were serving the United Methodist Church in Lisbon and Ohio, we included in our wills a provision that made each of the churches we served a beneficiary when we died, and we never told anybody about it because we thought that was between us and God. I also thought it was sort of tacky to encourage people in the church to pray for my untimely demise. Truth is, in one sense, that's true. It is between me and God. But when we came to Ontario, I began to think that I had made a big mistake. You see, I knew that there were other people who loved the church every bit as much as I did. They would have been just as glad to leave money to the church as I was. But they never thought of it. No one had ever asked them about it. So after I'd been in Ontario, I told folks about this provision, and at the bottom of pledge cards, we asked if anyone was interested in learning about this new program we were setting up, please check that little box. And June and I would be pleased to come and see them and explain how that decision-making process would go. And that first year, six different people responded that they wanted to know more. Now, I don't remember their names, and I certainly don't have any idea how many of them ever followed through on it. But I know that at least one person did, because years later I saw in the window a reference to a testamentary gift he had made. That person was a quiet person, a very quiet person. But he was a saint who loved this church and loved it for years. And it's interesting because when I think of June, I cannot help but think of the church kitchen. In those days, we did lots of dinners. We had silver citizens. And now that I am one, it's even more important. We had those wonderful turkey fundraisers in October. Bogey Dunn came from the seminary, and he even referred to me as the head turkey. And we had all sorts of congregational potlucks. And I think of the women who week after week worked to utilize that kitchen. It was brand new when I arrived, but it enabled this church to do an outstanding ministry. I'm so pleased to see such things as the PB&J, and I don't even understand how that operates, but I know what PB&J is, as well as Sunday breakfasts. I'm one of those that thinks that any day that begins with bacon is already off to a good start. It's ministry, and it is a ministry that I hope will continue well into the future. In fact, as I heard, you folks are having Ontario school people here tomorrow. And I think that's great. What a wonderful, wonderful ministry. Go Warriors. When thinking of June, I cannot help but think of Les. When we left here, he gave Liz and me presents. He gave each of us something made of wood, a bowl, and a beautiful box. And it was well done. And if you want to know how well done it was, all I have to do is ask you to look at his woodwork here in the sanctuary. All I have to do is ask you to walk into the library and see what he had done in the library. They are simply vignettes of ministry. How much effect does a Sunday morning sermon have to do with all of this? And Peg, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I'm gonna. How much effect does a Sunday morning sermon have to do with all of this? So let me tell you about a woman named Stella Pittman. That's the only last name that I will mention this morning. Stella was a very old and a very frail woman who lived alone in a house on Park Avenue West. Some of you older folks may remember Stella. And every Sunday morning as Stella left the sanctuary, she would shake my hand. And she was very frail, and she would totter, and I would be afraid to let go of her hand for fear she would fall. And every Sunday morning, as she shook my hand, she would say, "Good sermon, Pastor." And I loved that. I loved that. And one year, and it was the only time in my entire career I've ever done anything like this, the Sunday following annual conference, I substituted a singspiration for my usual sermon. And as Stella left the service, she shook my hand and said, "Good morning, or good sermon, Pastor." And while I think good preaching matters, I was never again under the misapprehension that my sermons were the most important thing in congregational ministry. Preaching matters. Don't get me wrong. Preaching matters. But most of the effective ministry that is done comes out of the hearts and the minds of lay people. So yes, we're celebrating a century of ministry, but it is a ministry that is not yet done. And I hope that these vignettes will serve not only to highlight some of those ministries in the past, but to serve as guides to ministry in the future. Guides to ministry in the future. Come, O blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world, for I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. And so now I need to close with a few personal remarks. And I need to tell you, I gave this a great deal of thought. I was invited this morning to preach an occasional sermon, which is a sermon you preach on an occasion, like a centennial or a wedding. An occasional sermon which celebrates this centennial and also helps to set the tone for another period of strong ministry. And I hope I have done that. That's what I was asked to do. But I also came here this morning as a pastor. That's why I changed my mind and I wore a robe and stole this morning. Because I need to tell you another vignette, a vignette that took place in about 1950. And so I would have been about 9 years old. It was perhaps 5 years after the end of World War II. It was a hot August evening, and we were in the kitchen after supper. And in those days, we did dishes. We didn't have dishwashers. We were in the kitchen after supper doing dishes, and our neighbor, Dick Wells, came to the kitchen door with great news. He was laughing uproariously and obviously had something very funny to tell us. We invited him in, and he sat down on the kitchen stool beside the back door, still laughing and obviously having a great time. And Mr. Wells then told us that he and his friends had just set a cross on fire. in Myrtle Goldstein's front yard. I, of course, was a little kid and really did not understand the implications of what he was talking about. But my mother did. My mother did. "Get out," she said to Mr. Wells. "Get out and never, ever come back. Such things are un-American. We do not do such things in this house." Yes, I was just a kid, but with every passing year, I have become more and more proud of my mother. I have become more and more aware of the imprint that her standing up like that made on my own development, both as a boy growing up and as an American. For those who think that there are several sides to the story in Charlottesville, where people carrying flags with swastikas on them and carrying torches, marching through the streets, shouting filthy slogans, for those who think that there are several sides to the story, you are wrong, and we will not stand for things like that in this country. "Such things are un-American," is what my mother said, and the only thing that I could add is that they are also un-Christian. Let us remember and celebrate these vignettes of ministry. Amen. Let's stand for our closing hymn.
Not
"Here I
Am,
Lord."
Not quite yet. Philip, would you like to come up? Philip has a presentation for
I'm
you.
I'm supposed to be humble.
I might need your glasses.
You're getting old.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here today. It's nice to see some familiar faces. Mrs. Parks, will you please come up as well? Now, which side is your good side to speak to?
Whichever side you talk, I'll hear.
We're celebrating 100 years of faith and fellowship at the Ontario United Methodist Church, and it's an honor to be here today, and thank you, Dr. Parks and Mrs. Parks, for making the trip to join us. You know, you have been a great leader, not only in Ontario, but throughout the state of Ohio, in sharing your faith and making sure that you share the faith with those that need it when they need it the most. Whether it's been a letter, and I think all of you probably receive Dr. Parks' Christmas letters and various letters and emails throughout the years, or a phone call, or even an email, or social media. You're even on the Facebook.
Such a face.
Yes. And that's wonderful. But throughout the many years that you've shared your faith, not just with Ontario, but other places, we'd like to recognize you for that. And not only at this church, but in other areas of too. And with that being said, the state of Ohio, the 132nd General Assembly, would like to honor Dr. Parks for his dedication of faith. And this has been signed by Cliff Rosenberger, who is the Speaker of the House for the Ohio representatives, as well as Mark Romanchuk, who is our local state rep here. But I'd like to read just a little bit of this honor and present this to Dr. Parks. On behalf of the members of the House of Representatives of the 132nd General Assembly of Ohio, we are pleased to congratulate Dr. Richard H. Parks on being recognized for your years of service by the Ontario United Methodist Church on August 20th, 2017. You are a remarkable individual, combining civic concern and dedication with selfless initiative to become a dynamic leader in the area. And this prestigious honor is a fitting tribute to you for the outstanding efforts you have displayed as a leader, mentor, counselor, and friend. Through your unfaltering devotion to service and achievement, you have distinguished yourself as a conscientious and hardworking Ohioan. Willingly giving your time, energy, and abilities, You have striven to better the world around you, and through your generous contributions to various faith-based initiatives, you have earned the respect and esteem of the congregations you have served in the communities of Paradise Hill, Lisbon, Ontario, and Lakewood, Ohio. We are certain that in the years to come, you will continue to demonstrate the same unwavering commitment to excellence for which you have become known, and you are truly deserving of high praise. Thus, with sincere pleasure, we commend you on your exemplary record of service and salute you as one of Ohio's finest citizens. Will you all please stand and join me in recognizing Dr. Parks.
Thank you very much. Don't sit.
We're about to sing. Now we will sing.